So don't really want to bring you down here at the end of the hour. But if your internet access goes down or your computer crashes these days, I imagine you can tolerate that for a few seconds, maybe. Now, imagine if you're a school or an institution or a business or, say, an Air Force base. Or how about the Pentagon? As the network explodes and expands globally and cloud data storage becomes the norm, the impact of digital sabotage and internet attacks goes way up. It's an experience we can all relate to. It's a function of our collective dependence on the reliability of the online world and the development of some very sophisticated new weapons and viruses. In 2010, a little virus called Stuxnet caused server damage to an Iranian uranium enrichment facility, delaying Iran's nuclear capabilities for months, possibly years, according to intelligence experts. It was long thought that Israel took the lead in developing Stuxnet as a weapon in its own mission to keep Iran from going nuclear. But our next guest thinks the United States might have been the source. Richard Clark was the White House counterterrorism czar under three presidents. He's currently a managing partner of Good Harbor, a cybersecurity consultancy. He picks up the story. Richard Clark, welcome back to the program.
Good morning.
So, first of all, Stuxnet, how much of a weapon is it? Can you describe its innovative ability to take down servers?
Well, what it did was to cause physical control software, software that tells machines what to do. It caused that software to destroy the machines without the owner or operator ever knowing it until the machines were already destroyed. This is a proof in this Iranian attack that people can, the United States, I believe, can, other countries can, destroy real objects in the real world through cyber attack from thousands of miles away.
And part of this is an outgrowth, and before we get into the issue of who's behind this particular virus, the U.S. or Israel, part of this more generally is an outgrowth of a strategy at the Pentagon to, as software develops and evolves, there is perhaps an incomplete but certainly an effort to develop methods of encryption and then countermeasures to deal with encryption so that the Pentagon keeps pace with the development of software. Is that a process that am I accurately describing what the Pentagon is trying to do to keep abreast of evolving technology?
Well, that's what the Pentagon and the U.S. intelligence community are trying to do. But the fact is, all of the software that they use, 95% of the software that they use, is commercially available. And commercial software generally has flaws in it, a lot of flaws. And it's the exploitation of those flaws that allows hackers to take control of systems.
What is the fingerprint on Stuxnet that suggests it's not necessarily a solely Israeli product, but might have U.S. Involvement as well?
Well, I think it's likely a collaboration of the two. I mean, both countries had a mutual interest in doing this, and I'm sure both countries had a role. We can debate over which country had the larger role. I happen to think the United States would have had the larger role because, frankly, the United States has greater capability in this area, more resources. And it looks like, from what we can tell now that the code has been made public, that the code was designed very specifically, very narrowly, and with great sophistication to go after only one thing. And that is the facility at the Tants in Iran. It had lots of built-in control systems of the kind that the United States would normally build in to prevent collateral damage.
Now, can we be assured that the attack on the Iranian system, that there's no vulnerability in the United States for a similar attack, for a redesigned Stuxnet that might focus on a particular nuclear facility in the United States?
Oh, no, no, quite the contrary. Stuxnet, as I said, is now publicly available because it did escape out of Natanz, and thousands of people have downloaded it off the Internet. And by changing it a little bit here, changing it a little bit there, a sophisticated user could use it to attack a nuclear power station or an electrical power grid of any kind. Depending upon how you change it, you could use it to alter systems that run pipelines, or train networks, or anything where a software is telling machines what to do, like close this pump, open this valve, switch this track.
which is a ubiquitous phenomenon in the industrial world right now and in the security and military world right now. It's Richard Clark, former White House counterterrorism czar, managing partner of Good Harbor, a cybersecurity consultancy, describing the general vulnerability we have to software attacks. And, you know, we're actually experiencing some of that vulnerability. You're on Skype there in your office down in Washington, right, Richard?
Well, I don't know that we're experiencing the vulnerability. We're probably, by using Skype over the internet, probably vulnerable to someone else intercepting it. But since we're broadcasting on radio, I think that's okay.
Yeah, well, we know you have a lot of enemies down there in Washington, but presumably they aren't hacking into your Skype there to distort your voice in any way.
Well, I hope not.
All right. So let's talk about the efficiency of the development of something like Stuxnet in an organized way by Pentagon or Israeli intelligence officials versus a hack, which attempts on a freelance basis to do the same thing. Which is a more efficient way of developing weapons, hacking or a coordinated effort within a government?
Well, Stuxnet was extremely sophisticated. It was 50,000 lines of computer code. And just to give you a comparison, the average hack attempt uses about 200 lines of computer code. So there's a vast difference between what the normal hacker does and what some government did in the Stuxnet attack. But I think the key here is Stuxnet attacks don't occur every day. We've had one in 2 years and none before. What's more interesting, I think, is the fact that every day U.S. companies, European companies, are being successfully hacked, and their research and development, their intellectual property, their secret sauce is being stolen by foreign governments and foreign intelligence services, who then turn around and give that R&D information, that research and development information, to their own companies. So it's very hard for an American company to compete in the global market if they pay for all the R&D and their competition gets it all for nothing.
Is there any encryption solution here? And are you an opponent or an advocate of open source strategies, open access strategies regarding the internet and software development?
Well, open source used to be believed that open source had safer software because more eyes were looking at it and they could see the errors. I think recent studies by people like Carnegie Mellon University have shown that open source and proprietary software made by people like Microsoft, they're more or less the same. They all have vulnerabilities, and they can all be exploited. And we're driving that rate of vulnerability down, but nonetheless, they're still there.
You, of course, are well known as an individual who had an inkling that the attacks on September 11th were possible and attempted to notify people within the administration, among others. And I won't recap the story now, but that's certainly part of your reputation. I'm wondering, thinking about the cybersecurity phenomenon that is now where you spend most of your time, is there a similar attack out there? Is there a similar scenario out there that worries you, that you try to ring up friends and influential individuals and remind them that's out there as a possibility?
What worries me is not the one big attack, not the cyber Pearl Harbor that people talk about, but rather the death of a thousand cuts, where every day our intellectual property, our research and development information are stolen. And over years of doing that, that makes a big difference in our ability to compete internationally. And we end up buying products from China that are the result of research and development done in the United States and paid for by U.S. taxpayers or U.S. stockholders because China stole the R&D and the U.S. government is doing nothing really about that.
Finally, would you say China is winning or has won that war?
China is definitely winning the cyber espionage, industrial espionage war, and stealing terabytes of intellectual property from every imaginable kind of U.S. and European company. They're definitely winning. And right now, the U.S. government says it doesn't have the authority to do much about it.
Richard Clark, former White House counterterrorism czar, currently managing partner at Good Harbor, a cybersecurity consultancy firm, talking about the implications of the Stuxnet virus that delayed Iran's ability to obtain uranium and its nuclear program. Richard Clark, thanks so much.
Thank you.